Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. It is a Sunday evening. That means I am rolling solo. I am joined by you guys. You guys send in your questions via five-star reviews on iTunes, and I get to them. I'm still batting a pretty high percentage at this point. It might not be 100%, but that was only because of the timing for other reasons. But hey, I can't really complain about the questions that you guys have sent in, and because of that, I'm just going to keep on rolling. Today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about closing lineups. We're going to talk a little bit about other center options, building on the conversation that we had with Harrison last show. We got plenty of questions. You guys are still killing it in that regard. So thank you guys, as always, for doing that. Let's jump on into it. As always, you guys know where to find the show. Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Silver Screen and Roll, where I write. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Irwin LA. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. I think we're nearing 4,000 follows on there, which is insane. Thanks again for the crazy support there as well. The first question that I'm going to address here, and it's the first question that we got since the last mailbag, was about Jabari Parker and if his qualifying offer got rescinded. Do I think the Lakers should go after him? Well, it's kind of a moot point now. He is now a Chicago Bull. I don't really understand what they're doing there necessarily, but hey, you know, do you, Chicago? If he was available, I think the Lakers are pretty packed at the position that he plays. He's best at the four. LeBron is best at the four. Kuzma is best at the four. Other guy, Wagner is best at the four. Svi might wind up being better as the four in a small ball lineup. The Lakers are maybe hoping to use Deng this year. And also, the guy made $20 million. So the Lakers, it wasn't going to fit into their cap trying to utilize him there. So Parker is now a Chicago Bull. Best of luck to him. Closer to his hometown. Let's move on, though. The next question is from Team Mike 206. How long before Svi cracks the starting lineup? He's a rookie, but I don't think he'll see the starting lineup. And if he does, then the Lakers have much bigger issues this year. It'll probably be because of some kind of injury problems that they have. But do I think he can get minutes? I think that's a more worthwhile question. And to answer that, like, honestly, yeah, I think it's within the realm of possibility that he might. Every so often, I think he'll spend most of his time in the G League, where I think he'll completely blow that league up with his ability to shoot and finish and get by guys who have to close out a little harder to him than they would most other players. But as the season rolls along and as he becomes more comfortable there and maybe with a couple guys getting injured, I could see some Svi minutes. I'm sorry. That was not good. We'll just move on. Moving on. Next question. BWheat7. As the roster is currently constructed, who do I see as a closing five players? This is going to split the break. I'll start by saying this. The best five players, I think, that fit together right now are Lonzo, KCP, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, and LeBron James. The issue is there, though, that LeBron probably isn't going to want to play the five too often, right? So against certain teams and in certain matchups and heading into the playoffs, I could see that happening. And I think the Lakers will want to work out that lineup to see what it's capable of as the season goes along. So, you know, we might see it every so often. But I think more often than not, we probably won't see LeBron James as the center very often. And because of that, I could see him maybe sliding into a different spot, and we'll see how that plays out. Second, though, I'm going to jump into what I think is going to be the lineup that we see, especially early on in closing these games. We'll do that here in a second. So, look, we've seen coaches recently coach the Lakers with development as the top priority, right? Winning games wasn't necessarily as important for Luke Walton in the last couple of years as seeing growth from players. And so you would see some lineups at the ends of games, especially as the season goes along, that weren't necessarily there specifically to win games. And that's not going to be the case this season, right? Like the Lakers are going to be in the Western Conference where every single win is going to matter in the grand scheme of things. So it wouldn't shock me early on in the season to see more veteran-laden lineups to close games. Now, it might drive us crazy, and as the season rolls along, I hope the coaching staff realizes that the kids are probably better fits anyway than the veterans, and that those veterans would be getting minutes simply because they're veterans. But it wouldn't shock me, and you guys can yell at me and tell me I'm wrong all you want, but it wouldn't shock me if the Lakers finished games early on in the season with Lonzo Ball, KCP, Lance Stevenson, LeBron James, and JaVale McGee. It would drive me insane if they did that. I would much rather see Brandon Ingram in there. I would than Lance Stevenson. I would much rather see Kyle Kuzma even over Lance Stevenson. Hell, I'd like to see myself out there over Lance Stevenson. But as it stands right now, the Lakers are going to be trying to win games, and the coaching staff might fall victim to the way all coaching staff seem to think for some reason, that veterans happen to be better or more conducive to winning basketball games than young players. It would be too bad, but that kind of lineup to finish games is probably how that's going to play out. And you know, until the kids really prove themselves, that's probably going to hold true for a good little while. The kids are going to have to really step up and earn those minutes, and until they do, the Lakers' ceiling is a little lower with those veterans. Even if the floor might be higher, but the ceiling is going to be significantly lower with, you know, Lance Stevenson in there than Brandon Ingram or KCP even in there over Josh Hart or Rajon Rondo in there over Lonzo Ball. We'll just see if the Lakers coaching staff cares more about floor versus ceiling. And in games where you are just trying to win and you just need to get through that game and get a W, coaches tend to prioritize floor over ceiling. That's just kind of how it goes. Maybe in the grander scheme of things, ceiling becomes more important. But in the moment, and this is the way coaches think, they tend to care more about floor. Next question here comes from K.E. And basically a few questions here. One, why haven't I bugged Harrison about not being the only member of the receding hairline club now that LeBron James is in here? Well, because I'm trying to stay in the good graces of LeBron. not that he listens to this or anything. And trust me, I like to give Harrison a hard time about his hairline as often as I can. But right now, let's just try to play this cool. The next question that they ask is, which is a better joke, fake news or ball leaveable? I think fake news might be my favorite thing in Laker coverage right now, just because it annoys Harrison as much as it does. And finally, if I wonder if the Lakers will trade for a superstar before the upcoming season's trade deadline, I want to say yes, because at the end of the day, it's as much as everybody wants to act like the Lakers are fine and LeBron is fine being patient and letting the kids grow, and that the improvement of this Lakers roster is going to be more based on development of its players versus development of the roster itself. But that's a lot easier to say at the beginning of things when you're in this honeymoon period that the Lakers are both, or the Lakers and LeBron are both in right now. As that season goes along, and after they lose maybe 7 out of 10 games, and guys start kind of wondering, looking across the league and saying, you know, Kawhi is right there, you know, that you know, I want to say that the Lakers keep patient and remain patient, and they sign Kawhi Leonard at season's end as a free agent. But it's... That's not how the league usually works. It's like I said in the last question or a couple questions ago, where teams or coaches are more interested in floor versus ceiling just to win basketball games. The same can be said about front offices. Now, in terms of comparatively speaking or relatively speaking, this front office of Magic and Rob Pelinka is probably as safe as one is going to get. Jeannie Buss probably isn't going to fire Magic Johnson anytime soon, especially after he signs LeBron James. But you still, like, Rob Pelinka might really care about his job security, right? And from a couple different people that I've spoken to, Pelinka is more, does a lot more work in the day-to-day than Magic does, right? And that's kind of to be expected. Magic is an icon. So if Pelinka thinks he has to save his job, he's going to be more interested in floor versus ceiling. And yes, the Lakers have a much higher ceiling in terms of potential organizationally with waiting this out and signing Kawhi and keeping your assets available and flexible as the seasons go along. But it's hard to argue with the floor when you acquire somebody like Kawhi Leonard mid-season and you just have to build from there, right? So I want to believe that they're going to remain patient, but I it wouldn't shock me at all if they pulled some kind of trade deadline deal if the Lakers are kind of treading water. Last question from K.E. is if I would ever consider having a fan on the podcast or somebody to come on. I've been thinking about that, maybe like a phone line or something like that. If we do, you know, kind of post-game shows and we could have people calling in. As of right now, I'm probably not going to do that. I'm working with my bosses to see what they're kind of more comfortable with, and they give me a ton of leeway on this. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to host it. But it's hard to – look, frankly, I agree with Levitard on this. People who utilize callers to create content generally aren't able to create their own content, right? I prefer to – you guys are subscribed to my podcast, and you guys want to know what I think about stuff. I just generally roll with that line of thinking. But if that changes, you guys will be the first to know. We're going to take one quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to answer a question about options at center and just kind of build on the conversation that we had yesterday with Harrison. And we'll round out the show with questions about Zubats and Thomas Bryant. The Deng contract and whether he's the Lakers might use him, all that good stuff coming here in a second. All right, so this comes from I might mess this name up, but YayLab22. What are some options that the Lakers have at center? Is JaVale, Zubats, and Mo our only hope? Thanks, love the pod, your boy Ethan. All right, so we had this discussion yesterday, and one of the points that I meant to make in the podcast that I didn't, and that I meant to make in the podcast article that I wrote for Silver Screen and then didn't, was that if you look at the Warriors roster, one of my main concerns looking at that roster is last year they had JaVale McGee, who was barely playable in the playoffs. They had Zaza Pachulia, who is generally unplayable even at your local YMCA. They had Jordan Bell looks like he might turn into something, but last year you didn't feel all that comfortable with what he was in that moment. Kevon Looney, same kind of thing. They had a ton of big guys, and yet they were all just kind of stuck there at the bench. And when they were in the game, it was like, all right, we just got to get through these minutes and get back to the death lineup as quickly as we possibly can, right? So one of the things that I was kind of wondering about, and if you guys are interested in the conversation that I had with Harrison, it's in yesterday's show or Saturday/Sunday show. But one of the things that I've been kind of wondering about is did the Lakers look at that roster and say that was a lot? That was quite a few roster spots there filled that we didn't necessarily get full value out of, right? So maybe the Lakers are looking at that and they're saying, look, I think an open roster spot is more valuable than Lucas Nogueira or whatever, whichever big that is left on the market might be, right? And now that point is different than the point would have been earlier when the Lakers had a couple extra roster spots that maybe Lance's roster spot would be better filled with a Brook Lopez, though I don't think that was really ever an option based on some of the stuff I've heard since his signing in Milwaukee. Maybe that's what they're thinking. My big thing is, all I care about is that there's a process. And frankly, do I agree with their line of thinking? Right now, all I can see are the actions. And you know, I was at it in a conversation today on Twitter about whether I like the way Pelinka speaks. I don't really. I think it's a lot of bullcrap. But you know, when they try to explain their moves, I'm really interested to hear regarding the center spot. If they looked at it and they said, look, they wasted a lot of minutes down there in Golden State or up there in Golden State with guys down low. And we wanted to keep those roster spots or as many roster spots available for versatile wings who can go out and defend on the perimeter and get out on the break or spread the floor or create for themselves. Whatever the preference was, they find wings to be more valuable than bigs. And frankly, if that's their line of thinking, I might agree. I could maybe be swayed on that. Next question comes from Rigamaru. Or no, take that back. Next question comes from JNRO. 9676. my show, he says, love the show, helps with my insomnia. Is that your way of saying that I put you to sleep? Like, is that what you guys? Thanks, man. they mean it as a compliment. But question, I still have not heard any sort of rationale for keeping Zoo and waiving Thomas Bryant. Is there a palatable explanation from either the on-court or a salary cap mathematics perspective? Thanks. So to answer the first part of the question before I get to the cap stuff, frankly, on the cap stuff, I'm not really sure. Thomas Bryant, he was a second round pick. Zubats, I believe, was also a second round pick. And Bryant might have had one more year before he had to make any kind of decision on his contract. Here's what I'm kind of thinking with Zubats over Bryant is that I think Bryant fits, obviously, with the modern NBA better than Zubats does. But that's more from a perspective of if he works out, right? Like if he reaches his potential, then he makes more sense. And this is kind of becoming a theme in this podcast, but I think Zubats offers a higher floor. And again, the Lakers are going to be more interested in winning games. And yes, Thomas Bryant, if he figures things out, might fit or probably will fit better than Ivica Zubac long term. But the Lakers, like if you look at their moves, they've preferred older rookies outside of Bonga. And I think Bonga was somebody that they weren't really interested in making a pick with there. I think they were hoping that would be a part of a bigger deal. But if you look at their draftees, right? Mo Wagner, older guy. Svi Mykhailiuk, older guy. Four-year player, even though he's a little younger based on those definitions. Zubats being a year older than Thomas Bryant maybe means that they're more comfortable with what he might bring to the table next year. And they're looking at a lot of their guys and they're saying, we want Josh Hart, another example of this. We want guys who won't mess things up. We have guys who have higher ceilings, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, etc. But we want to surround those guys. And I think they thought that they had LeBron for quite a while. We want to surround those guys and LeBron with guys who just aren't going to screw things up and then kind of go from there. And I think in that respect, Zubats over Thomas Bryant, I'm not sure if I'm going to agree with the line of thinking, but I think that's what they were thinking with keeping one over the other. Rigamaru asks, since we are stuck with Deng's contract and we now have veterans, should he get some burn? He played small ball five in Miami, and I think he would be the best small ball five option. The best small ball five option is LeBron, if he's open to it. But this is one of the things I really go back and forth on. On one hand, I think the Lakers are just kind of saying with Deng, look, signing you was a mistake. That was a previous administration. Just don't create problems over there, right? Like, just go, stand over there. If you want to help mentor the kids, great. And I think they traded Mozgov over Deng in the first place, in part because obviously he was cheaper and potentially easier to move, but also because he was starting to create a little bit of a... He was making it known that he was not okay with just not playing. And I think, dang, we have never heard anything like that. Now, maybe that changes with the Lakers being a playoff team. And before, it was easier for Dang to look at the kids' development and say, all right, this is the situation that I'm in now. And now that the Lakers are a playoff team, maybe he wants to participate in that. We'll see. But I think for the most part, the way I lean most is in saying that Dang doesn't get asked to do very much in terms of actual production. The counter to that, though, is that, look, the Lakers did make quite the investment into Dang, and at some point, maybe they're interested in getting a return on that investment. And if Dang is open to trying to guard fives and play alongside LeBron and allow LeBron to guard fours while he guards fives in a small ball team or on a small ball lineup, maybe that's one way they go. But I still think mostly, for the most part, he winds up not playing at all this season. This question's an interesting one, and I think we're going to come back to it down the road as we get into more of the evergreen content that the offseason brings. But this is from Tommy Rainville. And basically, the NBA world still views Jordan as the greatest of all time. And he's asking if Kobe passed him, do I think Kobe would be considered the greatest of all time? And then there's some other stuff about, like, did the league step in and make sure that Kobe didn't do that? That's not true. I don't think that happened. I don't think that's a possibility. The league wants the Lakers to win titles. Kobe played for the Lakers. And look, as great as Jordan was, he wasn't exactly a Boy Scout, right? Like, there are a lot of people out there who wonder whether his stepping away from the game had something to do with Stern kind of nudging him and saying, hey, why don't you take a little bit of a break, right? Why don't you? And it's not necessarily it doesn't have to be the cynical view of that, right? It might be that the league needed at some point after Jordan to figure out, all right, what's coming next, right? And with Jordan still there and dominating the way he was, it was kind of hard to come in and take that mantle. And fortunately, you had the next generation of guys: Shaq, Duncan, Kobe, Dirk, go on KG, and then they got the league to LeBron and Wade, and then that generation got us to where the league is right now. And you've kind of just seen that mantle passed along. But I don't think there was any situation where the league was invested in Kobe not passing Michael. Regarding that question, though, I think for a lot of people, Kobe would have passed Michael because championships are kind of sort of the point of playing. I do think, though, that we have gotten smarter in our evaluation of players, and efficiency matters, how good a teammate you were matters, and did you make players, did you make teammates better? Those kinds of things are taken more into account, but if Kobe won more titles than Jordan, you'd be hard pressed to convince a lot of people, maybe myself included, that he wasn't better than Jordan. We'll just see how. And the way Kobe went about winning his titles, yes, he won his early three titles with Shaq, but winning two of them with leading his own unit, and if the Lakers were able to pull off that Chris Paul trade and eventually trade for Dwight Howard, and win a couple more titles, and Kobe is the kind of leader of that group too, and they win two more and he has seven, then I think, yeah, I mean, I think you really have to talk about him in the greatest ever to play conversation. But you know, it's a fun hypothetical. As it stands right now, though, Michael is I think clearly greater in the grand scheme of things, and probably will be for quite some time, especially now that it looks like, and a lot of people think, that LeBron might not win a title in L.A. If LeBron wins a title in L.A. and takes his third different franchise to the promised land, now you really gotta, like, you see, that resume is pretty hard to argue against. Last question here. Oh, no, two more questions here. First one is from QBreezy12. Who do I think are some of the biggest hacks in the sports journalism industry? Harrison would murder me if I answered this question. So I'm just going to quote Dave Chappelle, say F-I-F, and move on. Last question, though. Hi, Anthony. This is from Canon5D2. Amongst the young players we have, Kuz, B.I., Hart, Lonzo, even new additions of Wagner and Zvi, Who do I think will benefit the most from playing next to a great player like LeBron? Also, who do you think has the best chance to emerge as the next homegrown star? All right. I think in terms of players who best stand to benefit, I think it's probably in some – I'll do this in order. Lonzo, Kuzma, Hart, and Brandon Ingram. And then Wagner and Svi, I'm not really going to count in those things because they're rookies and I'm not sure how many minutes they're going to get. I think Lonzo has the most to gain because, frankly, his stock seems to be the lowest of those guys for some reason. Kuzma and Hart are both role players who kind of easily kind of can get slotted into an easy role to look good in. And then Ingram, I think he has the most potential out of everybody, but I don't think LeBron necessarily is the guy who's going to help him get there. Now, LeBron might teach him things, and maybe they play off of each other, and in that respect, he gets better. But like everything that LeBron does is going to directly affect the way Kuzma and Hart are able to play. They're going to be more open. Their shots might mean more. They're going to come with higher leverage attached to them, but they're going to be more open as they take them. Lonzo has a player, maybe no one better at finishing in transition than LeBron is right now. And if Lonzo can get those hit-ahead passes and make the game easier for LeBron and everybody else, then it seems to work that way. But Ingram's fit with LeBron, as Pete and I have kind of talked about earlier, isn't that natural as it's currently constituted. So that's going to be something that everybody should watch. And then in terms of the guy who I think is the best chance to emerge as the next homegrown star, I think it's Lonzo for a lot of the reasons that we were talking about. And also because, look, we also have to look at the writing on the wall here. And if the Lakers ever do bite on a Kawhi trade, it's hard not to think that Ingram is going to be involved and go down there and be a San Antonio Spurs. So I think that's also worth taking into account. And I also think Ingram, like if I had to gamble on one in a vacuum to be the next homegrown star, and that's kind of the issue with this entire conversation, is that none of this happens in a background in a vacuum. I think Ingram has the most potential, but he also has the lowest floor. And I don't know how close he gets to either of those sides. This season's going to be really fascinating to watch with Brandon Ingram, because I think it's more likely he turns a bunch of heads and everybody says, holy crap, this is the dude. But it's also semi-likely or kind of likely that maybe, you know, he gets asked to stand in the corner and be a spot-up shooter, and that fit doesn't quite work well with him, because that's maybe one of his weakest traits right now, and that'd be kind of too bad if that's what winds up happening with him. We'll see. Let me know what you guys think in Harrison's mentions, and he likes to pass those along. You guys can follow the show. You guys know where to follow the show. Thank you a ton again for these questions. You guys are killing it. We're at 464 reviews on iTunes. That is an insane number, given this is a Lakers-specific podcast, and I'm a nobody doing this. So thank you guys for all of the support. Keep those questions coming. We'll have a fun week ahead for you guys, and you know, we'll start getting into the off seasons and really open up the topics and get into, you know, maybe some Lakers history stuff. We'll have Pete back on here. I kind of gave him a week off last week because he works way too damn hard, and we were all in Vegas frying our butts off. So back to the normal schedule this week, and then we'll start heading into the off-season schedule. Thanks for listening today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.